Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of On the Fly, brought to you by HoopBall.com. We're providing in-flight insight for all Pella fans. I'm your host, Nick Garisco, and as always, I'm here with Pelicans expert, Michael Pellichet. You can find him at Mike_Pelicans. This is the last podcast before the NBA regular season starts, Michael. We have preseason games to cover, and we're going to talk about the Pelicans rotation. And next week, I think we're going to get into some Pelicans fantasy basketball outlooks. But as a reminder, if you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our podcast and give us a great rating on iTunes or whatever you listen to this on. Let's tip off with some preseason takeaways. Pellichet, for what it's worth, the Pelicans are 4-0 this preseason with wins over the Hawks and Bulls, Jazz, and Spurs. We have the Knicks on Friday in Madison Square Garden to wrap up our 5 preseason games. And our regular season opener is next Tuesday, a week from today's recording, at the defending champion, Toronto Raptors. That's a primetime game on TNT. Last week with special guest Jake Madison, we covered the preseason opener. And since then, we've had 3 games. So I'll set the stage by saying the obvious takeaway here, Michael, has to be Zion Williamson, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's been a heck of a preseason. It really has. It's not just that he's doing so well. It's like he's doing it on almost a historical level, and it is preseason, so we're not gonna like go crazy with it. But it really has been. I mean, it's been insane, man. He's basically producing at the same efficiency that he was in college against much better opposition.
Right. I mean, versus the Bulls, for example, he was 12 for 13 from the field for 29 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists. He's been incredibly efficient, as you've said. And he's actually, you know, he's passed the eye test. And he's playing significant minutes, which I've kind of been surprised about. I thought we were going to, we kind of took it easy on him in the summer league. I know he had the knee issue, but we kind of shut him down for that. And I thought that we were just, you know, he's our prized possession. So I thought we were just kind of slowly going to work him in. But no, the Pelicans has he played more minutes than any other Pelican? I think he might have so far in the preseason.
Yeah, so he's played 27.2 minutes per game, which is pretty close to
his starter numbers, right?
He'll probably play a little bit more. I think he'll probably be closer to 32 to 34. But, I mean, it's certainly a big workload for a rookie. Rookies honestly don't even top 30 minutes per game usually in the regular season, much less the preseason, much less after a summer of doing all kinds of, you know, endorsement deals and traveling around and all that stuff. He's been playing a lot.
Right. I think the best way to put it is Zion Williamson has been as advertised, right? I mean, that's kind of what I think of, and that's high billing, right? I mean, that's more than what we could ask for. I mean, his expectations are so sky high that, you know, if he's playing as advertised, that is great news for the New Orleans Pelicans. Another rookie, Nikhil Alexander Walker out there. He has been shining. What's your takeaway on him?
Honestly, I think Nikhil Alexander Walker is already the third best guard on our roster, and I'm including Redick, and wow. I think he's behind Lonzo. I think he's behind Drew. I've been blown away by how good he is, and I want to make sure that this is on the record, because I don't typically praise rookies. Zion's an exception to that, and even with Zion, we could get into some individual things that I don't think he's doing particularly well, mostly on defense. But in terms of, I don't think I've ever seen a rookie, at least in a New Orleans uniform, play quite like this. Aside from Chris Paul, of course, Nikhil is not only a really gifted passer, and I think it's easy to look at the offensive game and to say really exciting things, but it's actually not just that. It's when he doesn't have the ball, he's moving without the ball, he's got really good shot prep. I think he's on defense, he's extremely aware of what's going on. Even when he doesn't have the ball, he slithers around screens, he works hard, he competes. All of these things, I mean, he's a well-rounded player already, and he's only 21 years old. I think he's an all-star at some point in his career. I really think he's that good, and I say that without really any doubt. I think he's just fantastic. I'm blown away by how good he's been.
That is extremely high praise, and that's more than I thought was going to come from you here. As a reminder, Nickeil Alexander Walker was the pick that we got for trading down with the Hawks, right? We ended up with Jackson Hayes and Nau. I think it was like pick 22 or something like that. I could be off on that number, but I think we got him because of that trade, right?
Yeah, so we traded for 8-17. So 17 was Alexander Walker. 17. And then
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's all right. And then they also had, I want to say Didi also came. I think it was pick 35. I'll have to check that one myself. But so those three picks, yep.
I mean, Nau has been so impressive this preseason. I mean, his numbers, he's only played, 15, 19, 16, 23 minutes in the four games so far. But, he's averaging, I'm looking at his numbers right now, 12, 13, 22, 13 points. So he's averaging about 15 points a game and, has quite a few assists. He had two games with 7 assists. And he's had two threes the first game, 3 threes the second game, 4 threes the third game, and 2 threes the fourth game. I mean, this is all in only 18.5 minutes a game, I think is my calculation there. He's been very efficient. He's not a guy that's just jacking up shots so he can get those high three numbers or high point totals. I mean, what is he shooting, like 50% right now or something like that?
So it depends on if you're using a traditional field goal percentage or one that adjusts for threes. So like a true shooting perspective, he's extremely efficient. He's about, I think, almost 60%, which is very efficient, especially at his volume. Wow. Now, again, that factors in. So his actual field goal percentage number is 43.5, but the reason it's so low is about actually over half of his shots are coming from three. So true shooting is a much better indicator of his overall efficiency. And like you said, so on a per 36-minute basis, which is a pretty big load, certainly more than he'll get this year, he's averaging about 29 points and nine wow. assists. Now, I mean, so, again, if you go down the roster and you look at all the different per 36s, they're all extremely inflated. So Zion's at 31 points, Nikhil's at 29, Jaleel's at 28, and Drew's at 27.5. Now, given that Jaleel didn't play a lot of minutes, Nickeil and Zion have played a whole lot more minutes than he has, you're not going to get 29 points per game from Nickeil Alexander-Walker as a rookie. I can promise you that. But everything that I've seen, again, it's not just the stats. So he's averaging almost 10 assists per 36 minutes. It's really about his overall feel for the game. I actually think, and I mean this when I say it, I really think he's probably our best prospect that's young outside of Zion already. And I think a lot of that is about how he can operate the pick and roll. I think he's got a really good feel for when to be aggressive and score himself versus including his teammates. He makes some risky passes that we had talked about this summer. I wasn't anticipating that he would be ready this soon, but I think he is. I think he's ready to get not significant, not like 40, 30, 40 minutes a night, but I think he is going to get, after a few games, it'll be very evident in my eyes that I don't see that there's anybody else who can run a second unit for our team quite like he can unless they stagger Lonzo and Drew's minutes a whole lot.
Is that where you see him? You see him with the second unit? I think he's a type of player who Alvin Gentry's going to have to find a way to put him on the court. And I realize that the rotations aren't set yet, and we'll get more into the rotation later on in this episode. But just speaking of Nau right now, what do you see his opening role being?
I don't know if he's going to get more than a few minutes on the first few nights. I had a good conversation with Michael McNamara on Twitter today, and he was talking about how often coaches will default to the guy with more experience. I do think that our situation is a little bit different than a typical situation because we're not necessarily trying to maximize our win total this year. Again, we talked about like the sliding scale of where we're balancing, you know, winning and developing our younger players. But I do think at some level, I really, without somehow staggering Lonzo and Drew, I just haven't seen anything from anybody else that indicates they could run the point for our second unit. And I think that's sort of a natural transition. So if they really see him, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, as a point guard, I think it makes a whole lot of sense to put him on the second unit where you're not interrupting a lot of the other major guys' minutes, but you're still giving him a chance to show what he can do. And at the same time, you're also sort of sheltering him from some of the exposure of being thrust into the spotlight. I mean, they've talked about with Zion plenty. Nikhil won't get the same kind of anticipation, but I think it's important to put young players in situations where they can succeed. And I fully expect that when Nikhil gets his opportunities, that he'll take advantage of them.
He's going to have turnovers. A guy passes the eye test, but he's going to have turnovers because he's a very aggressive player. And he's that's kind of what I like about him, though, is that he's an extremely confident player when you watch him. So some of his passes, you know, they're a little errant, right? I mean, they're either a little late or trying to fit the ball through tight coverage there. But he seems like the type of player who, you know, it's really starting to click for him. I mean, already this soon.
Yeah, I think I don't know what it is about him. I mean, this is something that I hate to default to, but he's one of those guys who just gets it. And like you said, he passes the eye test. These are all very sort of intangible things. We're not pointing to specifics at this point, but he looks like a basketball player in ways that you really wouldn't expect.
He looks the part.
Yeah, he does. And I feel bad because now we've talked so much about Nikhil. I didn't even get a chance to talk about what Zion has been specifically, and I think I'd be crazy to not give more detail on it. So Zion is shooting, I mentioned his efficiency earlier. Right now he's shooting 71.4% from the field. I actually don't have his true shooting right now, which again I think is a better indicator. I'm sure it's around there since he's only taken free throws besides that basically. And but Zion is averaging 31 points per 36 minutes. And again, I think what's really crazy about this, and again, I thought that Zion would have some sort of adjustment finishing against NBA length. At this point, at least so far, there's been nothing to indicate that that'll be an issue. And I think you can look no further than how he attacked Rudy Gobert, because Rudy Gobert is, in my mind, the best rim protector in the entire NBA. And so Zion really...
going right at him.
He was going right at him, and I think what makes Zion particularly difficult to guard is that Zion is not just explosive vertically, he's extremely explosive horizontally as well. And I think his quickness paired with that, it's really hard to get in front of him, especially for these big guys who, yes, they have more length than Zion and they can reach over and block a shot, but they're usually more stiff and they're not as agile. And that's what makes Zion so crazy is he can finish through you, he can finish over you, and he can finish the side of you in combination with having, and he has this amazing dexterity around the rim. He can finish with either hand. He's really... It's been absolutely crazy how good he's been. And again, not saying that that's going to be something that I don't think he's shooting 71% this year. I think that would be an outrageous expectation. But even if Zion shot like 62 or 63% as a rookie on high volume, it'd be ridiculous. Like that would be, it might be unprecedented for a rookie. And I think he has the possibility of shattering some rookie records.
Yeah, usually the people who are shooting 60% are like the DeAndre Jordans who are only taking shots within 4 feet of the basket or just getting these alley-oop dunks, of course. Zion Williamson's going to be taking more outside shots. I know he's going to be driving to the rim a lot, but I love how you said that he can finish horizontally. That's a really interesting statement right there because I don't think a lot of people or a lot of analysts really kind of consider that. And when you say that he can finish around people or to the side of people, what I think you mean is that just based on watching him is that he is so athletic compared to some of these centers. And Rudy Gobert is really athletic. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, he is extremely athletic, but a lot of these other centers who are 7-footers don't even have near the athleticism that Zion Williamson is, even though Zion's technically shorter. But Zion Williamson can contort his body in certain ways, like when he jumps, And horizontally, when you say that, I think of strength, right? Like he's able to kind of put his hip into somebody and then jump in kind of a different direction and then finish with the, you know, the right or left hand, depending on what's needed there. While these other centers, you kind of just, he's so deceptively strong that they are kind of knocked back on this bump, on this hip check, right? And they're knocked back, and then they just stick their long arms out there, and normally they're in position to block a guy, right? Normally they're in position for a block, but with Zion, the way he can contort his body and the way he can just kind of change direction and then finish with either hand, they're missing on the block, right? Like Zion gets the space that he needs from his, you know, from the way that he uses his strength. And he's deceptively strong. I mean, he's shorter than all these guys, but he's stronger than them. And it's been pretty impressive to watch.
Yeah, and I'd say, too, like, not just the way that he can contort his body, like you're saying, although that is absolutely a big thing for him. I think it's how – I really don't – you know, I think of explosion in a lot of different ways, right? So, like, you have guys who can get up over anybody. Maybe, like, a Gerald Green is a good example, although Gerald Green is a toothpick. Poor guy just got hurt pretty seriously. But
yeah, I just saw that. Yeah. He's on IR now, right?
They're wondering if he's going to be out for, like, the whole season. I don't know if it's been confirmed yet. It's certainly – it's speculated that he might be. But, I mean, there are guys who can get over players. There are guys who are very quick end-to-end, but they're not necessarily good at getting up and above people. And I think with Zion, it's really about how explosive he is to where he can jump – and he's not just going straight forward. He's actually going – it's really almost like an agility thing. And I don't – again, it's because he's explosive in all facets of his movement that no one really knows, at least that I've seen so far, how to handle that. I mean, I think right. – I do think from a standstill, you know, if he gets stuck under the basket without momentum, like maybe then he will have the issues that I had anticipated. But I would say otherwise, no, I'll walk it back and say – the way that he attacked Gobert, the way that he's attacked everyone combined with his handle, it's not just the explosion. It's his handle, it's his explosion, it's his timing, it's his dexterity around the rim. He's really just the most amazing finisher around the rim that I think I've ever seen, and I that might include LeBron. He's on that level to where finishing around the rim, I think he's in LeBron's category, which is a hell of a thing to say.
Right. I mean, LeBron's one of the best drivers of really all time, honestly. That was a big criticism early in his career, is that LeBron should have driven the ball more because he was that dominant at it. But either way, what's interesting about Zion here is that he kind of reminds me of an NFL pass rusher, to where, you know, he's one with multiple moves, right? Like he's not just speed rushing to get around the left tackle here, just trying to beat him to the outside every time, right? Zion Williamson, you know, he's got the spin move, he's got the bull rush, all these football equivalents here. He's a pass rusher that has all kinds of different moves, and it kind of puts centers, or, you know, offensive tackles in my analogy here, in a situation where they don't really know what to expect when he gets the ball or when the ball is snapped, right? And Zion can beat you in different ways, so it kind of leaves them not necessarily guessing, but it leaves them just a couple milliseconds late, and that's really all it takes.
Yeah, he's definitely multidimensional, and I think, you know, one of the more interesting things is, if I don't even know if this is a thing, but it might be useful to develop some sort of like floater game, you know, in the midst of his career, but I don't know if he'll need it. I mean, at some point he probably will when he slows down, but I haven't seen someone finish at the rim quite like he is able to. And that includes, again, I liken him a lot to Blake Griffin, but I think he's a souped up version of Blake Griffin. And Blake Griffin, when he was young, and Blake Griffin's still a very good player, but when Blake Griffin was young, I mean, he was something that the league hadn't really seen in a good while. So Zion's just fantastic. It's hard to say that enough.
Definitely. I mean, those have been the two biggest takeaways, is Naw and Zion Williamson from preseason. Do you have any other, you know, maybe veteran takeaways here? I know that, you know, Drew has missed a game or two. I know that Derek Favors isn't playing a lot of minutes yet. I'm assuming they're trying to conserve him there. I know that Redick's not really playing a lot of minutes for the same reason. What are some Lonzo is playing a couple of minutes though, and what are some of your other takeaways on Pelicans veterans for the preseason?
So I'd say one of the ones that stuck out to me is really about Brandon Ingram, and you know, I want to keep this balanced. Brandon Ingram, I want to say graded out as a very, very efficient isolation scorer last year and probably the year before that. He's interesting, though, because isolation basketball has its limits. Isolation basketball has a tendency to exclude other players on the team from that movement. I mean, the whole goal of initiating an offense or initiating any movement is to get an extremely efficient shot. And typically, you know, if you're a very good player, you're going to be drawing multiple defenders as well, which is going to create efficient shots for your teammates. But what stands out to me with Ingram is able to sort of slither past people, but it takes him a good while to set up his shot. And I think he's sort of a throwback towards an older era of player and an older style of play. I think that where
like
you get
a Carmelo Anthony kind of situation,
kind of, yeah. And he's a different player from Anthony, but what I see about him is it takes him so much effort to set up a shot, and even if he can basically be somewhat efficient himself, I think he gets in this score mode where he'll put his head down, and all of a sudden his blinders are on, and I think he loses his ability to really understand where everybody is at that moment. And I think it's because he's putting so much effort into creating a separation that he needs to have his own shot off. Because he's not.
Did you see that in Los Angeles, or do you think that might be by design with the Pelicans, who are kind of telling him, hey, your primary focus is to score the ball because we're going to lead you out on the second unit here and we need some ball scorers?
You know, I probably hadn't watched enough of the Lakers to justify giving him a more nuanced opinion about what he was back then. You know, it feels right. And when I had actually tweeted about it, Some guy from the Lakers actually chimed in and said, yeah, that's a thing, and it's been a thing since he's been in the Lakers. You know, given the way that he scores and given the way that he creates his own separation, I that would make sense to me, because I don't think he's a guy who – he's not blowing by you. He's certainly not overpowering you like we joked about last week. So I think for him it's about using his combination of length and kind of almost craft to create that separation for himself as a primary scorer.
And I suppose you're still staunchly in the group of Pella fans who believes that Ingram should be coming off the bench, right? Not in the starting lineup.
I'm trying to figure it out, because honestly, what's thrown me off a little bit is I still would want him on the bench. I was thinking because of Nikhil and what I want him to be off the bench that maybe I wouldn't. But I think Nikhil and Brandon Ingram would actually be a pretty good combination on the bench. I think Redick is a more natural fit for the first unit, especially, you know, given the fact that they don't have a lot of shooting on that unit. Zion is almost exclusively shot from the rim. Ray Favors, if he is going to step out, I don't want that. So in my mind, Redick seems to make the most sense. Now, whether they'll do that, I don't think they'll do that, at least for a little while. But I think if they're talking about pure optimization in terms of lineups, I think the best way to go would definitely be to be Drew, Lonzo, JJ, Zion, Favors, and that's the starting lineup. And then you start putting Nikhil and sort of Ingram together, because I think it'll help him, because Nikhil is aggressive as a scorer. I don't think he's going to, again, take the amount of shots that he's taken so far. He's taken over 20 shots per 36 minutes, which is a crazy high number. I do think he keeps people involved, though, and I do think that Ingram would benefit from having more looks on that unit than he would on the first unit.
I think this is a good segue to talk about the Pelicans, how deep of a team they have this year, and to kind of talk about rotation and lineups here. We've mentioned that I think there are only six returning players on this team from last year. So we're going to be trying a lot of lineup combinations on the floor. We're going to be experimenting and seeing what works and what doesn't, especially early on in the season. And not everyone can play. And I think that's a good problem to have, especially when you're a young team that's you know, supposed to be rebuilding like the Pelicans are supposed to be. But, you know, we'll be competitive, of course. But it seems like a good problem to have when you have too many solid players who can go out on the court. But we do need to figure it out. And I'm curious as to who you think might be squeezed out of the rotation, if anyone.
I'm having a hard time choosing between Josh Hart and Frank Jackson. I think, you know, we've talked about Jackson before, and Jackson had some really awesome scoring moments in both the summer league and in the preseason. Someone who I've always been rooting for, seems to be a pretty great guy, almost like a Drew 2.0 in terms of his character. What I struggle with Frank is that I don't think on this team his skill set is necessarily needed. That's a little bit redundant, but I think that he's someone who scores well, but I don't see him as a great creator for other people, and he's an undersized guard, so you don't get a lot of positional versatility with him on defense. Now, I do think that he has a role as a microwave. I think that that's a perfectly fine place to be as an NBA player, but if you're talking about the bench unit, you know, I really think that Nikhil has to get those minutes, because I don't see anybody else, again, that's remotely capable of running that second unit unless they're staggering.
So you see kind of an overlap with Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Frank Jackson?
Not necessarily an overlap, but I'd say that, like, if there's only so many guard minutes to go around, then I think there's a possibility that, you know, he's the one that's squeezed out. But maybe you go into two guard lineups. Yeah, that's going to be obvious. But maybe Frank Jackson would play off the ball, and we've seen that in the preseason, and now you're talking me out of my own argument, because I could see them running Frank and Nikhil on that unit if they're not playing with Lonzo and Drew. And I think it would actually work.
It's matchup-based, right? I mean, different teams that you play mean that you have to defend certain things, or you want to take advantage of certain things offensively. We see teams all the times kind of, you know, play small ball, like against the Warriors, or do the opposite. You know, sometimes the Warriors don't have a – you know, true center, so they'll lay it. It's just every team is different, is my point, and different coaches will actually play different starting lineups out there to kind of either attack a weakness or to try to combat the other team's strength. So I could see some two guard lineups out there in the second unit if they want, you know, some speed and athleticism out there, and it's kind of a small ball second unit with kind of Ingram leading the charge there. But then we have kind of a lot of scoring on the second unit all of a sudden, right? Like Frank Jackson and Nikhil and Brandon Ingram, right? Is that too much scoring on the second unit?
I don't think they're going
to... You think that leaves us liability elsewhere?
No, I don't think so. There's actually a lot of collective playmaking on this team. I think there's a lot of scoring in general. What I would say, though, and Nicola Melli is someone that we haven't talked about a whole lot. He would probably be a scorer on that unit as well. There really is just a lot of people who could put up points on this team. It's like four or five guys between Zion, Drew, Ingram, I would say Nikhil, and then that would probably be the round out. The Jahlil actually could also put up some points in the second unit in his limited minutes, but I think there's enough. I really don't think it's a problem. I think it will be hard to construct. Again, I think the second unit really needs some management from someone beside. Again, it's just Nikhil. But I do think that there will be some issues with. There's a logjam at a lot of different places, and, you know, what does that mean for people getting consistent minutes? Maybe that throws off their confidence. It's not the worst problem to have. It's not a bad thing to have depth. But I do think it puts Gentry in a tough spot, because someone's got to be left out. There's 240 minutes. You're not getting everybody. Not everybody's getting minutes. That's just the way that it is.
And usually what happens in sports in general is it's never really an issue until you start losing, right? I mean, that's when players start to complain about their minutes. That's when their playing time. That's when, you know, there starts being rifts in the locker room. If the Pelicans start quickly and they're winning in the Western Conference and they're very competitive, you know, nobody really should be blinking an eye at, you know, the lack of minutes they might be playing, because things are working. But when things go poorly, that's when some of these players start to question whether they should be playing more. And I know there are other factors, of course. Sometimes these guys are making business decisions. Sometimes players are in a contract year and they want to be playing more for that reason, because their livelihood's at stake here. You mentioned Josh Hart. Josh Hart is definitely somebody that I struggle to put in the rotation. And it's not necessarily because I think he's a bad player. I think he can shoot threes. I think he was a decent role player for the Lakers the last couple of years. But I'm struggling to, you know, I feel like he's primarily a shooter, and I'm struggling to find his place even in the second unit for this team.
I think it's a fair point, and we talked about it earlier. I was between Frank and Josh Hart, yeah. And you kind of talked me out of my own argument, so I really think it's Hart. If you look at his team, he's a 3-and-D kind of player, and that's not a bad archetype, but you really don't have a spot for it. I mean, again, there's just so many guards on this roster that deserve minutes that someone's getting squeezed out. And so I could see him in some ways, you know, maybe there's a player they want to put Hart on for 5 or 6 minutes here and there, where they want him to just pick up the guy full court, get in his grill. You know, obviously he's going to have a lot of energy to expend. I can see that kind of thing. And I think he's good enough to justify putting him in that role, but that's not a consistent night-to-night role. And I don't think he's getting consistent minutes. And again, nothing against Hart. He's a good player. I don't see who he's replacing, especially if Etuan Moore's playing.
About that is that right? Oh yeah,
I don't know how I forgot to mention him. I struggle with Etuan because I think we talked about in a few podcasts ago about how they told him to take what 6 3-pointers a game, and we were wondering.
6 3-pointers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's coach speak. It's right. Coach speak, but I think the message was that when he's in the game, you know, they want him to jack up some threes. Like, they want him to do that. But the question we're asking right here on this podcast today is, how often is he going to be in the game? And that's different than what he does when he's in the game. So I don't know how often he's going to be in the game. He's kind of like Josh Hart, where it's like, you know, we have some decent three-point shooters in the second unit, or at least scorers, I should say. Maybe they throw him in there when we're trailing by, you know, double-digit points to try to pick up some threes. You know, I'm not really sure. And I know the Pelicans like Etuan, but it's tough. It's tough.
I think he'll get some minutes just because he's a dependable player and he's been on the team long enough. But I think at some level, what I'm worried about is who potentially loses minutes because he is playing. So, like, I put up a very, very loose expectation of what kind of minutes I'm seeing for different players. And there's just not, again, there's not a lot of wing minutes available. And I think if you can talk about people moving up a position to maybe, like, let's just say Zion plays a five some and maybe Ingram slides up to the four, I think you can open up some minutes for people like that. I think Moore will get some, but I guess my point is, if Moore's getting some, then someone else isn't. And I really want a few guys to get all the minutes, right? I want Drew, I want Lonzo, I want Nikhil. And as much as I like a lot of the other players, you know, and I think Redick is the other guy who probably needs to get minutes, those three or four guys, that's the priority for me. They really are. And I think, you know, maybe
in Zion.
Oh no, I'm talking about just the guards right now. Yeah, Zion, of course. So. Yeah, no. Yeah, Zion. I would like him to get minutes too.
Yeah, would like him on the court, not on the bench. But yeah, I think that Etuan Moore, Josh Hart, and Frank Jackson definitely the players that, you know, are really going to have to, you know, outwork each other to find roles on this team. But this is all on paper, right? And this is all before the season even starts. So there are always injuries, right? Especially with the Pelicans. I know we brought in head trainer Aaron Nelson over here, and I know he's supposed to make us healthier magically, and I'm sure we will have better health. I mean, that's how it's been going wherever he's been. But I think that it's important to note that there will be injuries, and that will open up playing time for some of these players. One that I'm very interested in, not that I would ever wish injury upon anyone, but it's worth noting because we talked about in this podcast, is Lonzo Ball is a very valuable player, but he has been brittle. And we've spoken at length about that a couple of episodes ago. Can he stay healthy now that we've seen Naw play in preseason? We have solid depth there, you know, and that's nice to see.
Yeah, it is. And I really think so. The more I watch Lonzo, the more I stand by what my argument for him was, is that I don't think he's necessarily a pure point guard who initiates the offense. He's really, to me, a guy who fills in all of the gaps and who's probably most optimized as a secondary playmaker. I look at Lonzo and Nikhil as sort of an ideal pairing moving forward. It would be better if Lonzo had a consistent shot, and I think that's really the question mark in all of this. But Lonzo is still a guy that I see as someone who's very, very good in scramble situations, someone who has a really, really good instinctive feel for the game, and who will fill in a lot of different places during the game where Lonzo won't be a guy who drops 10 points in a row, but he will be someone, you know, in the midst of maybe a momentum, like for the other team. He might make an important steal. He's going to make a lot of filler plays that I absolutely want in my guard. And I think Nikhil is actually more of a natural primary initiator. So I think that combination long term is something to watch. And I do want him getting a lot of minutes because I think Drew is going to be at his best when he doesn't have to have that burden of playmaking for everybody else. And I think that's either going to have to be with Lonzo or Nikhil. And honestly, at this point, it's probably a little bit premature to put Nikhil in there with Drew. Because, I mean, Drew deserves to be playing with people who – I love Nikhil, but he's still young, and I think he is ready. But Lonzo is going to be at least a more dependable option than him for at least some time.
We've talked about the guards at length here. We've talked about Zion Williamson and Favors earlier in the podcast. And we talk about Zion all the time, but we haven't really discussed Jahlil Okafor and Melly a lot. You did mention them, but we didn't really get into a deep discussion there. How do you see their roles on the team? Who's coming off the bench as the second center, and do you think they're going to play together in the second unit?
This is one that's probably one of the hardest things for me to figure out. I would guess that I'm so excited talking about Walker that I keep talking about
him. Yeah, I know.
I'd say Nicolo Melli would probably have an edge in my mind. I know that Okafor has done a really good job getting himself in shape. He's addressed a whole lot of things off the court, like his sleep apnea, and he's in fantastic shape. I do think it will probably be matchup dependent, but I would say the majority of times I think Melly would be the guy. I think he's a more well-rounded player. Jahlil, though, I mean, it's no knock against Jahlil. Jahlil has looked good so far. He really looks like he's in awesome shape. He's certainly earned a right to be competing for minutes. And I'm not – this is one of those opinions that I'm not as sure on. I would lean Melly, but I would not be shocked if Okafor got a lot of minutes too.
Jahlil Okafor was – when Anthony Davis was out last year, especially the majority towards the end of last season, Jahlil Okafor was oftentimes like our best big, and now we're sitting here talking about him as like our fourth best big, right behind Zion and Favors and Melly here, which is, I mean, you keep saying it over and over, it's no knock on Jahlil, but that's where we are now, right? I mean, that's pretty impressive, the improvement that this team's made, and it's more exciting that everything has been as advertised during the preseason. I mean, the Pelicans have just kind of parlayed their amazing offseason into great preseason performances. And I understand that it's preseason. I get it. It means, the win-loss result really means minimal at best, arguably nothing. And the only reason I say minimal is because maybe there's some confidence boost there, from a morale standpoint. But it could mean obviously nothing. But you know, you use the preseason to to scout players like Zion and to kind of confirm beliefs or kind of find out weaknesses here. And the Pelicans players that we're going to be relying on, like Zion Williamson, and even some role players who we wanted to see, like Naw, have turned out to look the part. And they just kind of parlayed this exciting offseason into a fun preseason. So I'm even more excited than I was about this season after seeing these preseason games.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not it's not that we're so excited because the Pelicans are winning. The Pelicans are winning, like we had talked about. They're winning because they're deep and because the minutes are more uniformly distributed than they usually are. So you're getting teams who are deep winning more games than they probably would in the regular season. But like you said, although it isn't something to conclude based on, I think what would you prefer to see, obviously, right? Like you want to see it going well. And everything that I've seen indicates that this will be a good team. Now, there will be defensive issues, I think, that they'll experience. I think they have a lot of new players, a lot of young players. It's going to take time, in my mind, for that defense to gel. So, and one thing that I haven't talked about yet with Zion that was actually negative is that Zion can very often get lost without the ball. Nikhil does not right now, which is what makes him an exception to the rule. This is very common for rookies to sort of be lost on defense. So it's something to watch. It's not something to get super frustrated about simply because, honestly, most star players don't really pay attention off the ball. It's very uncommon for them to do that. So it's nothing wrong with Zion yet. It's something that I'd like to see develop over the course of the season, and hopefully it gets better. And I do want to say one, so a couple of negative things to balance out all of our.
I was just about to ask. We've been all smiles here, and I want to kind of, before we sign off here, I was just about to ask, you know, what are some of the things that you've seen in the preseason from a takeaway standpoint that you're either a little concerned about going into the regular season, or that you are definitely concerned about and you want to see the Pelicans improve on moving forward?
So one of the things that I've seen, I haven't seen a whole lot from Derek Favors. Now, again, he hasn't played that much, so he's played about 60 minutes.
That's true.
But I would say that I haven't seen enough to get super excited yet. What I've been most, I guess, disappointed in is that he really hasn't scored a whole lot. That's not his role in the team, and that's probably him taking a backseat to other primary scorers. And he's also hampered by an injury right now. I think it's a hamstring thing. So
it's a hamstring.
Am I going to throw away, you know, years of basketball because Derek Favors is doing poorly in the preseason? Of course not. You know, I would just like to see more from him than we've seen so far. And I actually thought that Favors was going to be our second best player. So right away, I mean, at least at this juncture, it looks like Zion will be better than he is. So, but what I'd like to see is I'd like to see the Favors that we've seen previously, because that Favors is a very good basketball player. And again, maybe there's no reason to be pessimistic. It's just something to observe. And I just haven't seen a lot from him so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think even when he has been out there, he hasn't looked too impressive. Like, he's not really jumping off the screen. He's just kind of looked, they say a lot in the NFL, they say Jag, which is just another guy. And I know that Favors obviously is not just another guy out there, but that's how he's looked in the preseason. But you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it is preseason. I mean, that's, you know, he's probably just going through the motions, I would think. But it is very slightly, it's worth mentioning, right? I'm not going to say I'm like really concerned about it, but it's definitely worth mentioning that he's had a very, very quiet preseason. What else do you have?
I'd say that JJ Redick hasn't been particularly impressive either, but maybe that's the same thing. Maybe it's because JJ and Derek have been here before. I actually don't remember, because we've had trouble getting broadcast games for preseason for years. So it's odd. I really don't have a great reference point for what I should be expecting from all those older guys. I think, again, am I going to – so JJ is shooting 25% from three right now, and Frank Jackson's shooting 53.3. Do I put more stock in either one of those? Well, no, cause I don't. Like, Frank's not going to shoot 53%, and JJ is certainly not going to shoot 25%. JJ Redick is one of the best three-point shooters of all time. So – and honestly, and one of the things about Redick that's important to indicate here is that if J.J. Redick goes out there and he has an off shooting night, that does not mean that he didn't make a positive impact on the offense, because no one is leaving J.J. Redick open in an actual NBA game, period. He's one of the best that's ever done
it. It's about spacing.
Yeah, it's about spacing. It's about gravity. No one's leaving him to go double someone else unless it's on like a Zion drive and dunk or something like that. So I think it's important, though, to balance, because we are saying, oh, we shouldn't pay attention to the negative things about Redick and Favors. All of that context, or all of that, I guess, skepticism should probably be applied to everything else. Yeah, I've been really...
No, I mean, if Favors and Redick actually have quiet regular seasons, we'll legitimately be able to look back on this season and say, you know, hey, well, this started in the preseason. I mean, it's one of those things where if Redick and Favors for whatever reason don't pan out as free agent additions for the Pelicans, it's one of those things where you look back on it and you say, well, you know, we could have seen this coming, right? Because they were not impressive in the preseason. It didn't look like they really fit in the preseason, and now they're having a poor regular season. And for whatever reason, there just doesn't seem like a fit. So you can't say that it's meaningless, because if they do happen to flop or bust here with the Pelicans, then at the very minimum, we should be able to say that we saw it coming and we should be able to look to the preseason for when this all started.
And I think so. The way that I would explain it too is just as we are talking about to be somewhat skeptical of what's happening negatively, to be the same of the positive. So I would say, you know, you have a lot of data on both those players, and that's why I'm more inclined to treat it as sort of brushing it off. A lot of these younger players, we don't have a lot of data on. And in that way, you know, all of these things are subject to change. I am absolutely, you know, gushing over Nickeil Alexander-Walker right now. He has been in summer league, which is inconsequential, really, and then in preseason.
Wait, so you're saying he's not going to score 30 points a game this year?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it's noticing that there are good things qualitatively, I think, more so than it is quantitatively. And so the fact that the numbers are jumping out, that's wonderful, but are the results sustainable? And no, of course they're not sustainable for Nickeil or Zion, but they don't have to be sustainable. If it's 80% of what it is now, then I'll be excited, especially for Zion. For Nickeil, I think the shooting percentage is probably a little bit better than he'll actually shoot this year, especially as a rookie. It's very uncommon for rookies to be efficient with volume. Zion, I think he's not going to shoot 71%. He might shoot 63%, and again, that would be wonderful and probably shattering records.
I still think that's high, but yeah,
it could be. I don't know. I have to go back and look at Karl Anthony Towns. I know he was extremely efficient his first year. I want to say Jonas Valanciunas, even Davis. Now I would say that Zion will probably put up a good amount of points, and so that's what kind of makes it different is. You know, if you're going to be scoring about 20 points per game and you're extremely efficient already, man, I feel bad for the people who are listening who might not be Pelicans fans. They probably are because they are listening. But if Zion's anything like this during the regular season, I might be insufferable. I might already be, but I'll be even more insufferable.
Seriously.
So,
I mean, yeah, we've been it throughout the offseason. But if it actually pans out like this, I mean, he's been even better than we thought he was going to be. And we're trying to be objective here. I mean, this guy is just a freak of nature. I mean, he's the real deal. And you mentioned Anthony Davis. And before we sign off, we have to be a little petty here. He had a sprained thumb in the preseason game. I take it you're not very surprised. Am I right?
I mean, I'm trying really hard. I never loved Davis as a player. I should say that I never loved rooting for him as a player. I always thought he was a fantastic player, and I think he will do awesome things with LeBron. But the pettier part of me does kind of – it's a small injury, so it's nothing to get – you know, I don't want to wish ill on anybody. But
that's all it was with Davis. That's why it's funny.
Exactly.
You know, I wouldn't be laughing if he broke his leg or something like that.
Right.
That would be terrible.
I think the funniest.
But the fact that he has another minor injury is just, it's just funny because, like, you know, all the Lakers fans might be like freaking out, oh, he's getting an MRI and everything like that. And all the Pelicans fans are just kind of rolling their eyes, like, yeah, get used to that. I mean, he's several first quarters of your games this year, he's going to leave with a bruised, leg or something
like
that.
It's the Davis special to go into the locker room and to get x-rayed. Like, that guy, that man, whatever that medical team, if they're getting commissioned based on how many, you know, images they do,
volume.
I mean, so that's the funny part about it. Like, you're right, it's not wishing injury, it's the fact that he gets nicked up like everybody in the NBA gets nicked up, and he's constantly in the locker room getting whatever kind of treatment or scanning or whatever it might be. And I will not miss that, assuming that if Zion's anything like that, I will have a tough time. Just not because I love Zion. Yeah. He seems like a great guy. I'll have a tough time because it's just a sore spot, and I've had enough of it. I would.
And you don't want to be hypocritical.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'll love Zion probably for a good while because the person that he is and the character that he is. But I just don't want to have to go through it again. As I guess the bigger point, because it was rough.
Yeah. I think that has to wrap up this week's episode here. Thank you all for tuning in to On the Fly, the official New Orleans Pelicans podcast for HoopBall.com. In-flight insight for the sharpest Pella fans. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to On the Fly and give us a great 5-star rating on iTunes. You can also give us a follow on Twitter at Mike_Pelicans, and I'm at FantasyLawGuy. Tune in next week. Lock up, Pella fans. We'll be right back.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.